Our next presenter will be presenting on racial disparities in levels of care in an emergency department. And Eli, I'm going to make sure I don't do what we were talking about before. Eli Stark is presenting his work at this year's conference, which was research completed as an undergraduate thesis in public health and race in medicine from Hampshire College in Amherst, Massachusetts. He continues to reside in Western Massachusetts, where he has worked as a certified professional coder, CPC, since 2008, and is part of a collective supporting incarcerated and formerly incarcerated mothers. Clearly a very vulnerable population, and you heard earlier in the introduction when we were talking about our safety net providers, I think this is a really important topic. And I also want to welcome you at presenting on your undergraduate research. We don't often have that, and I would like to encourage more people to do that. Welcome, Eli Stark.
All right. Good morning. As she said, I'm Eli Stark, and I'll be speaking this morning about racial disparities in levels of care in an emergency department, in an urban emergency department in Western Massachusetts, specifically in Springfield, Massachusetts. My undergraduate work focused on race and racism in emergency medicine and connections, if any, to racial or ethnic health inequity proliferation. The material in this presentation is from a larger project titled Not in My House, Inequities in Evaluation and Management of Emergency Room Visits. So this is, let's see if I can work this thing. All right. So sounds like I don't have this may not qualify as a necessary financial relationship to disclose, but in the interest of transparency, I was employed by Emergent Billing, which is the source of half of my data, as a medical coding specialist with a focus on emergency department coding. So I approached this research with the following understandings. One, that race categories, and to an extent ethnicity, are socially and historically constructed. Two, that people are marginalized or privileged and have been historically marginalized or privileged based on those constructions. Three, that medical culture helps maintain and perpetuate this marginalization and privileging. And four, that these are three of the elements that combine to yield racial and ethnic health disparities. I was prompted to conduct this research by a desire to investigate whether the medical coding process accurately captured patterns and disparities that I observed informally in individual patient and provider narratives, as well as to evaluate disparities in emergency medicine at large. An extensive analysis from the Institute of Medicine indicates that patient-provider interactions with high time pressure, cognitive complexity, and pressures for cost containment might particularly exhibit disparate care and, quote, found evidence that stereotyping, biases, and uncertainty can all contribute to unequal treatment. This suggests that even without the overcrowding present in EDs nationwide, patients of color seen in the emergency department may be additionally at risk for adverse outcomes or disparate treatment when compared not only to white patients in the emergency department, but compared to like patients in other clinical settings. So, I took on this study to examine the role of patient race, ethnicity, insurance status, and primary language on the level of care received at emergency room visits. I hypothesized that patient race, ethnicity is a non-clinical contributor to emergency medical care. And I just want to be clear, for the purposes of the study, I'm using patient race, ethnicity as one term, mostly just to try to accommodate the way that the hospital registered patients and what they were maybe thinking they were counting for. The study utilized secondary patient demographic data from an urban emergency department with roughly 70,000 visits a year, and the corresponding provider billing information from the provider's contracted medical billing company. The primary factor of interest was patient race, as recorded on emergency department registration. The race categories used herein are not to be taken as representations of any patient's identity or identities or lived experience, and should not be construed to ascribe any essentialness or innateness to social race categories. I have made some attempts, though small, to undermine often held presuppositions. I replaced Hispanic non-white, the label from the raw data set, with Hispanic of color, in an attempt to challenge the replication of whiteness as invisible and ethnically or racially absent, which in turn constructs people of color as ethnic others. And the primary languages of interest, English and Spanish. Insurance status. I use Medicaid. In Massachusetts, we have MassHealth, so everybody needs to be insured, and so MassHealth is one way that is used, or that's one way people are insured. And so Medicaid and other government subsidized. So there's a number of different government plans. There's the basic Medicaid, and then there's other income dependent MassHealth plans. Overall, there were 101,240 patient visits included in the data set. Patients' data were included for analysis if visit registration information listed African American or Black, Caucasian or White, Hispanic of color, Hispanic, White, English or Spanish language, and one of the four insurance status listed here. So we've got Medicaid, Medicare, private insurance, and self-pay. The little note at the bottom says, race data not represented in analysis, Asian, mixed race, Native American / American Indian, other, or Pacific Islander. And that was about 2,151 patients. As you can see, about the mean age was about 37 years old. About half of the patients were female. About 15% African American, 40% white, approximately 20% Hispanic of color and Hispanic white, or Hispanic white, and approximately 68% listed English as their primary language, with almost 30% listing Spanish as their primary language. The medical billing claims data were aggregated in inferential chi-square analyses conducted to evaluate the role of patient race, language, and insurance status in predicting the levels of care patients received in the ED. Excuse me. The primary study sample consisted of those patient visits where a high-risk diagnosis was coded, so i.e. those diagnoses generally warranting the highest levels of care because of risk for rapid decline or patient mortality. Secondary analysis was conducted for patient visits that resulted in a back pain diagnosis, as a number of studies have suggested that pain management in emergency departments is one area where inconsistent treatment by race and ethnicity particularly persists. This subset was used to help assess how adequately industry standard codes may be at capturing known disparities if levels of care serve as a very rough proxy for actual treatment, including indication of the aggressiveness of pain management or the medication given. The proportion of evaluation and management codes, or EM codes, or levels of care by race data were the primary outcome of interest. Evaluation and management codes in the data set were assigned per the 1995 documentation guidelines for evaluation and management services from the Centers for Medicaid and Medicare and Medicaid Services. 2009 and 2010 ICD-9 codes and current procedural terminology, or CPT, evaluation and management levels 99281 through 99285 and critical care code 99291 were used to dichotomize levels of care into adequate or inadequate per diagnosis. A level of care 5 or above was considered to be adequate for high-risk diagnoses, i.e. abdominal pain, acute asthma exacerbation, chest pain, myocardial infarction, and acute coronary syndrome. A level of 4 or above was considered adequate for analysis of back pain diagnoses. Chi-square test statistic was used to evaluate the significance of difference in levels of care between race groups within diagnosis subsets, using an alpha level of 0.5, i.e. p is less than 0.5, indicating significance, 0.05. Analyses of proportions were conducted to evaluate how race, ethnicity, language, and or insurance status predicted levels of care. So, I found that the level of care varied significantly by patient race in the chest pain and abdominal pain diagnoses subsets. and when language and insurance were controlled, the difference was not significant in the chest pain diagnosis group, while it persisted in the abdominal pain group, where white patients were more likely to receive an adequate level of care, and where it was significant among English-speaking, privately insured patients. This was also true for English as primary language, Medicare-insured Hispanic patients of color. The difference between Spanish-speaking patients listed as Hispanic of color and Hispanic white was significant among Medicare-insured patients in the abdominal pain subset, though the effect was reversed where Hispanic white patient visits were more often coded as adequate across all insurance types. This difference was significant among Medicare-insured patients, with p equaling 0.006. In the asthma exacerbation subset, race data was significant when language was controlled for, with African-American and white patient visits significantly more likely to be coded as adequate. This was mitigated when insurance was controlled in addition to language. Among patient visits with Spanish listed as primary language across diagnosis subsets, Hispanic of color patients were less likely to have their visits coded at an adequate level compared to patients listed as Hispanic white, except in the acute coronary syndrome or myocardial infarction subset, where all patient visits fared comparably. Race was most significant in analyses of Medicare-insured and of privately insured English-speaking patients, where higher levels of care were associated with patients registered as white, with private insurance, and English as their primary language, except, for example, with the diagnosis of chest pain, which infers a risk of cardiac episode. We see English-speaking African-American patient visits coded more often as level 5 or above than patients with other race data, except in private insurance. While African-American race data seems to predict higher levels of care among chest pain patients across all diagnoses, it seems that private insurance status predicts higher levels of care for patient race data groups except for patient visits where African-American was listed for race. I suggest that we're still seeing a race effect in this subset, possibly in response to, quote, racialized risk, i.e. race or ethnicity being seen as a proxy for risk of morbidity or mortality from a particular disease or condition, or to a perception that African-American patients more often have no insurance or have government insurance. Some of these results are contrary to previous studies, and so it may be that descriptive analyses alone fail to adequately show treatment differentials that we know exist or to take into account higher incidence of certain conditions within racialized populations. Evidence has shown that of patients suffering acute MIs, patients of color are 4 times less likely to be admitted to the hospital than similar white patients. If this racialized risk results in better quality of care for patients of color in particular, this is not necessarily a bad thing. However, it is unclear if the higher levels of care coded actually resulted in better quality of care or better health outcomes for these patients. The most significant limitation of this project is that it only examines data from a single emergency department. Regional and national expansion is necessary to understand the true ability of evaluation and management codes to assess risk of differential treatment by patient race, ethnicity, or otherwise. This study did not control for age, return visits, or chronicity of conditions, so it is possible that these have affected the results. Retroactive data analysis in this form cannot capture patients' lived experiences. Within the constraints of the data, however, one can infer that perception of patient race ethnicity may be a meaningful contributor to treatment disparities, and that patient race ethnicity may contribute to emergency department levels of care. It is also possible that underlying conditions or processes are missed, and it is not clear whether higher levels of care actually correlate to better health outcomes. We could be seeing a coinsurance effect that is unaccounted for. Approximately 27% of African American and 16% of Latino or Latina Medicare recipients lack Medicare supplemental insurance compared to only 9% of white Medicare recipients. The Office of Management and Budget Categories, which have been used here, risk reconstructing the confines of race. This study did not look at languages other than English or Spanish. However, English and Spanish did account for 97.9% of all patients' primary language. Race data categories other than those included in the analysis were not considered. The power of the results would have benefited from larger sample sizes in certain instances, such as in the myocardial infarction subset. It is possible, statistical methodology considered, that the large sample size overall may increase the likelihood of finding significance, but as this study utilized only descriptive analysis, i.e. chi-square versus, say, logistic regression, this is unlikely a factor here. There are several strengths worth highlighting. The data analysis was somewhat integrated into critical theory explorations. This study took into account critical care services, which are an extended part of the emergency department CPT subset, code set. Therefore, the results herein may in fact be more accurate than previous like research. That said, very few researchers have utilized medical billing claim information as I have here. I suspect that the near dearth of previous research using evaluation and management codes to examine disparities in treatment and, when used, inaccurate assignment of value to those codes results in part from the relative isolation of the world of medical coding and billing from the more academic world of epidemiology or other health research fields. In this light, this study may provide useful ground for others to improve on. While it's hardly a concession to admit the importance of understanding why health inequities exist, or to underscore the need to document what forms they take, the overarching tendency The overarching tendency in public health literature to merely confirm, deny, or measure does little to disrupt the realities for people and communities of color in the U.S. The impact of individual providers critically approaching power and medical care should not be underestimated, but if their ways are to be the ways of all, and if medical institutions are to change, health sciences researchers must utilize intersectional research models such as public health critical race praxis or other models that focus on pragmatic application of research while attempting to take into account the complexities of real-world identities and experience and those models for conducting research with the community, not on behalf of a community. This study suggests that there are non-clinical contributors such as insurance status, patient race, ethnicity, or language that impact the level of care individuals receive in the emergency room. I argue that the very same issues that make emergency departments more likely to perpetuate disparate treatment than other clinical settings may also make emergency rooms uniquely suited as entry points for institutional de- or restructuring to begin to unhinge health inequity as it stands. This study suggests that analysis of evaluation and management codes may not accurately reflect population-level health disparity patterns, but it may be useful in providing a rough picture of treatment behaviors within provider groups in emergency rooms, whether or not levels of care translate to disparate health outcomes for patients. There's an incredible amount of data of interest contained in medical claims, and this study suggests that more extensive analysis of levels of care in emergency departments is warranted. And so thanks for being here, and thank you particularly to Elizabeth Conlisk and Falguni Sheff, who are my academic advisors, and to Dave Palmer at Smith College just for supporting this work.
Yeah, I'd like to start off with a quick question.
Sure.
I'm not sure if you're familiar. CMS, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, has this new innovation center.
Mm-hmm.
It's the CMMI, for those of you who are interested. And they are pursuing much more in the way of trying to link claims data with outcomes data. And they're discussing the possibility of doing these types of activities. And CMMI actually, I work for NIH, I do know that CMMI has $10 billion allocated to it for the next 10 years. That's provided the Affordable Care Act is not dissolved in the next whoever takes the presidency. So, something to consider for future research and for all of you who are interested in this, because I think we've really elucidated some future paths that we need to explore. You have time for questions.
Great.
That was an excellent presentation.
Thank you.
We should have a mic out there, but we don't.
Something that occurs to me as a limitation, in one, there are two parts to this. In medicine, it's very straightforward. If somebody who's in the chest can't consult for standards, you have to do this FYD, you have to get X number of units. Otherwise, and out the door, the PCI exam, so all of the stuff has to be done, it's pretty standard. In asthma, there are gradation of symptoms.
Sure.
Sure. Based on, and also the person who's coding it
Yeah, critical care services, so they were just considered adequate if they were above and so level 5 or above.
Right, so what I'm saying, level 5 or above, I'm assuming that being above level 5 is good, but it may not be good. It may not be appropriate to the person.
Okay, I'm not sure I totally understand the question. Critical care services in the emergency department, the way that current procedural terminology sets it up is that those critical care codes are the only codes in the emergency department that are time-based. The other codes in the emergency department, so someone has to, usually, it's very, I mean, if someone's not going to, incorporating the critical care codes in this is a way of capturing some of those patients who received very high levels of service but didn't receive a level 5 visit. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So that's just a way of capturing that.
Before anyone leaves, if you want Dr. Ryan's email address, I have it up here. So, you got it.
Thank you. The ICD-9 is not the same. Acute asthma exacerbation is 49392, and asthma is 49390. And so, as we coders like to say, doctors went to medical school, but coders are certified professional coders. It's very, like, we get to be like, the one moment we... it's the... No, I'm just... I appreciate that. And in the emergency department that I was using, the coders assigned the diagnosis codes. So that is consistent across the data set. But I definitely hear what you're saying. Sure. Yep. Sure. And I think that's something that we particularly need to be aware of in emergency departments because, I think, you know, the original tenets of emergency medicine being, you know, we're trying to move people who are very urgently or emergently sick. We have to efficiently and with a high quality care for these patients. And one of the things that I struggle with what I see in the emergency room is that patients who get labeled as quote frequent flyers and they start to receive lower levels of care. I mean, I took a man to the emergency room whose left arm was entirely numb. And was experiencing chest pain and hadn't been on his heart medication for days. And he was And, I mean, and the nurses and the emergency room staff, and this is not to criticize them at all. You know, we're just like, oh, so-and-so, he's fine. You know, and I mean, it's just you know, it's that it's sort of like we just can't let our guards down. I guess that's where I'm coming from, is that I understand and appreciate where emergency providers are seeing the same patients, you know, time and time again. And you know, the patients, particularly at the hospital that I work with, you know, folks who have to get dialysis will come through the emergency department to get admitted. You know, and that's a problem. I mean, it's just not, the system isn't effective. And I think that's also, I think you're underscoring that, and I appreciate that.
I just have one more question on the code. Mm-hmm. What you're taking codes are only from the ED, and so the person has the intensive care diagnosis code.
Uh-huh.
But you're not following up to see whether they actually went to the intensive care unit?
Critical care. Yeah. Critical care doesn't have anything to do with where someone ends up. It usually, actually, asthma patients are one example where someone may get a critical care level of care and then actually be sent home in rare instances. Yes? Yeah, me too. I mean, one of the things that originally prompted me to do this study was that I saw patients, white patients, being less frequently labeled as drug seekers and less frequently labeled as opiate dependent than people of color. And that is not, that's not consistent with what we know who uses drugs in this country. And who abuses drugs in this country. And, I mean, we see time and time again that folks of color are being targeted as drug users and being targeted as, I mean, in my other line of work, I'm very, very close to, I'm very passionate about mass incarceration, and that is a problem in this country. And so, trying to remove myself a little bit from that, and because I think the two are very connected. And I would love to do this looking at multiple visits, or, you know, looking at the number of visits per patient. That would be really, I would really like to do it. And I'd love to focus on opiate dependence and to see who's being labeled as opiate dependent, because I don't think that more Hispanic of color patients are coming in than white patients with back pain. But I think that more often what I saw is that folks who were perceived as poor and folks who were perceived as, basically, I think there's a lot of inferences we make, right, about someone. And so we can infer that they are less deserving of pain management. And I think that's one of the inferences that we see in the emergency department. And we know that there are disparities between how pain is being managed among race groups, and that as pain gets more severe, as patients report a higher level of care, that disparity grows. So I don't know if that gets a little bit up.
I want to point out for those, just a little bit of help on this. Have you seen the Institute of Medicine's report on relieving pain in America? It was released last, I think the official copy came out this year, but the draft copy was out last year. And so over 100 million people suffer from pain. I actually did a plenary session on this. And you can download the report for free. This is something that comes up, especially when you look at sickle cell patients,
mm-hmm.
and they get labeled as, the gomers, get out of my emergency room, frequent flyers, drug seekers, but they really are in significant pain, and pain is now being classified as a disease in and of itself.
That's a really significant issue because that changes that whole dynamic. If we don't prevent pain from cycling into something chronic,
right.
we're actually creating a disease.
Well, and I think that's something interesting that I think about too is obviously I think emergency providers think about, you know, every time I give this prescription out, you know, this is potentially an addictive substance. I know the providers that I've worked with are very careful. It's just one of the things that I like to think about, for better or worse, and at the risk of sounding a little, I don't know, paranoid isn't the right word, but that, you know, just because somebody's addicted to pain meds doesn't mean that they're not in less pain or that they're not actually experiencing pain. I mean, an addict is probably experiencing pretty high level of pain, you know, a physical level of pain, you know, if they're withdrawing or whatever. So it's just something interesting to keep in mind. And you know, and obviously, I think a lot of other sessions at this conference have touched on that the emergency department, you know, emergency department providers need more support and need more resources at their fingertips to be able to send folks, you know, to be able to immediately say, okay, you know, you've been here 5 times this week. What's going on? Is there something going on? You know, and I mean, I know patients come in and I read it. People say, yeah, you know what, I actually don't have anywhere to go. You know, it's really cold outside you know, I mean, they'll say it in the emergency chart. I mean, they'll say it in the charts. And we see that a lot with psychiatric stuff, that, you know, patients needing to access psychiatric services, needing to say they're suicidal when they're not. And that, I mean, it's a problem. You know, nobody wants to be labeled as suicidal or, you know, other things. So.
We need to wrap up, but I think our...
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Are you available?
I am available.